No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The throw, the punches on. He floats one wide open, and there he goes. Tied down for a Texan touchdown.
Hello and welcome to the bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy, and with me is Tom Chavarria. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm good. It's a Thursday, so it's kind of like that weird middle ground where it's like you're kind of done, you know, mentally living up the hype from the last week and like really anxious going into the next week. I really feel like it's a big game. This team shouldn't scare you, but they've got some pieces. They've got some players. You never want to overlook anybody. You work so hard beating so many good teams. I just really want them to go out and do what they're supposed to do on Sunday.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're kind of coasting down from the high. The Texans social media team has been on one pretty much all week ever since the Texans beat the Chiefs, but kind of coasting down from the high, looking ahead. And the big stat that sticks out to me is that Jacoby Brissett is 5-1 against the Texans. And he has looked, I think, far better than Kyler Murray did all season. He's made that team look a lot more formidable. We have to keep in mind that this is a team that's run by Jonathan Gannon, a more defensive-minded head coach. Whether or not he has the talent on defense to really stand in the way of what is a progressing, improving Texans offense is yet to be seen. But I do agree. I mean, it should be an easy matchup. I mean, I don't like saying that because it feels, you know, I'm going to knock on wood here, but I don't want to underestimate an opponent the Texans have. So I think we're in a good sweet spot to talk about both ends of things. Before we get started, I don't know if you've seen that video circulating from the Texans social media team of CJ Stroud, you know, leaving Cal McNair hanging, and then they posted the video. The funny thing is that I just recently saw a tweet from Lance Zierlein. He did some very important investigative journalism and found that video was Cal McNair's idea. It wasn't like some social media intern, like, which, by the way, I mean, the Texans have a really good group of them because you can tell by the content they produce. But it was Cal McNair himself was like, hey, this would be a really cool video. I'd be down to do it. And I thought it was funny. My favorite moment was when he goes to high five. It was like early on in the video, goes to high five the one dude, and the guy goes, no, that's for CJ. I'm like, oh, God. What are your thoughts on that video, just to break the ice before we get started?
I definitely did not know. I was like right now years old when I learned that was Cal McNair's idea, which makes it even better because he was kind of like back away. Like he tried to make himself disappear, if you could do that for a bigger dude. And when he did a really good job, like Cal's got some acting chops, you know, he like made himself like kind of like invisible amongst the crowd so that he would get, you know, past. Because I really feel like I don't think CJ missed him like on purpose. If he knew it was Kyle McNair, I think CJ missed him because, you know, it's just another dude and he was just a little far back. Like it was well played all the way around.
Well, and I'm not sure if he did it on purpose, like purposely tried to get missed, but like after CJ missed high fiving him, the video circulated and like Patrick Storm was the first one that I saw post about it. But it was a different guy who because the video they use in that video is like someone using their phone to film the TV screen as it's happening. And I think I would guess that Cal came up with the idea after that kind of went viral, because it was like 3 days later that they posted it. They're like, Cal's literally been waiting for this high five for 3 days. I think at the beginning of the video, the girl's like, he still hasn't gotten the high five. But I mean, kudos to him. There were some people that thought it was Hannah's idea, which has been a common theme where people are like, oh, Hannah McNair is the source of all things good with the Texans. So, I mean, bravo to you, Cal. Before we really dive into the discussion, just up front, if you're watching, if there's anything you want us to talk about, this is live for a reason, so you guys can interact with it. So whether you're on Instagram, I'm monitoring the Instagram chat. We've got, you know, Twitter, YouTube. If you want your comment to show up on the screen, Twitter and YouTube are the best places to be for that. We try and get through every comment and make sure that we cover what y'all want to talk about, because that's kind of the point of being live right now. But without further ado, let's dive into the Chiefs matchup first. What is your big takeaway from that matchup? Just broad strokes. We'll start there.
I mean, you started the show with Jacoby Brissett's 5-1 against the Texans. And for me, I guess part of that and part of like a theme that's kind of been, you know, this season, they've been slaying dragons all season long. You know, can't go to Baltimore, get a win. Regardless of the situation, they went into Baltimore and got a win. You know, can't beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead. Went into Arrowhead, got a win. So I no longer feel like they can't slay a Jacoby Brissett dragon. And for me, like to go into Arrowhead knowing that the Chiefs felt like their life was on the line and to battle a little adversity, you know, like the race out to a lead and then all of a sudden they come back, they got the stadium rocking, they got momentum, and they bowed up and you know, fought back and got the win. Like those are things championship teams do. And to see the Texans kind of like mature in that way, to not wilt, you know, to be able to go, nope, we're going to play now and we're going to get it done, is really big. Cause last year, maybe the Texans lose that game. 2 years ago, they're definitely losing that game. And for this team to figure out a way to get it done and just really make one of the best quarterbacks of all time, you could say, look very, very, very pedestrian, is so impressive. And you just get more national media talking about this Texans defense. And it's like, they're now showing up to the party that we've been having since, you know, I don't know, week three, maybe. And we knew this was the kind of defense they were going to have in the preseason, but we're really seeing it, you know, just full flight. And I'm running out of words to describe how great this defense is, because there's just, I mean, the historic is now being thrown around a lot, you know, like, and rightfully so.
Yeah. And I like that you say like their back was against the wall. I think a lot of people so far this season, the common theme I've seen is there's a lot of people that will look at the wins the Texans get and they'll be like, here's a reason why that's not impressive. Here's a reason why that's not impressive. And what you have to understand about this win is, yes, the Chiefs are 6-6, but they're a talented team that is literally fighting for their playoff hopes. You know, a rat that's backed into the corner will do anything to get out of that corner, even to the detriment of itself, which is what we saw happen. The Chiefs sort of imploded as they started to gain the momentum back because not to take away from what the Texans defense did, the Chiefs offense was also just kind of falling all over itself. The Texans defense took advantage of that. So there's a lot to unpack there, but I think the big thing is that in this big moment, the Texans needed a win. The Texans were going into Arrowhead, a place they've never really, they haven't had a lot of recent success. And they went in and got the win that they needed to get. And I don't feel like I was particularly stressed. Like there was like a point where I guess it got pretty close. Like the third quarter was a tough watch, but overall I felt like it was a really good game. And one of the talking points that I've been, you know, pushing on Twitter this week is that CJ Stroud had a really good game. I think that a lot of people look at the game that CJ Stroud had and they look at the third quarter and they say that was a bad game. And those same people watched Davis Mills play like absolute crap for three quarters against the Jaguars. And they go, but he's the savior of the Texans. He's better for the Texans because he had a really good fourth quarter and managed to propel the Texans to one of the biggest comebacks in their history in order to beat the Jaguars. You can't have it both ways, right? Like, I think that the game Davis Mills had against the Jaguars, while it wasn't completely from start to finish a great game, was a good game for him. And I think that the game that CJ Stroud had in spite of a really rough third quarter was a really good game for him. I think that one of the fallouts, one of the downfalls of him having such a great rookie season is that every time, and let's look back at what he did against the Cardinals in his rookie season, 300 yards, two touchdowns. I remember a lot of the talk at that point being about the three interceptions he threw. It was the first game where he really had a rough go of it in terms of turnovers. But that's what people have kind of grown to expect from CJ. It's why his sophomore season was so rough. And why people think he underperformed. It's why this season, a lot of people are still really down on CJ. But the fact of the matter is that if you're going to watch the box score and judge CJ's performance, I don't really care what your opinion is of his performance. Like, I watched the game and I acknowledge his third quarter wasn't great, but like, he is a very integral part of why the Texans won this game. He showed why he is the franchise quarterback, why the Texans can rely on him to be that guy in a similar way to Eli Manning. I've shied away from that comparison, but I'm embracing fully the 2007 Giants comparison. And at worst, right, and I don't even think CJ is at that level. I think he's better than an 07 Eli Manning. But I think that it, at worst, if that's what the comparison we're making is, he is doing enough to move this offense along. This offense has progressed. It's not a CJ problem. It's never been a CJ problem this season. It has been an offensive scheme problem of the team adjusting and getting used to Nick Caley's offense. It has since started to improve, and CJ is a huge part of that. CJ is a quality quarterback. So one of the downfalls of this game is that people will look at, you know, 200 yards, look at his stat line and be like, that was an unimpressive game. And then reinforce it with a poor third quarter. CJ had a really good game. He's making elite throws. He's doing what he needs to do. And my biggest takeaway from that game is that CJ is ready to be what this Texans offense needs. That is, in my opinion, and this Texans offense, this Texans team, like you said, is ready to step up and meet these expectations and beat these demons that have haunted them for like the existence of the franchise. The Derrick Henry game, T.Y. Hilton game. Look back in history on all these players that have had this death grip on the Texans franchise, these franchises that have had death grips on the Texans, and the Texans are ready to work past that. Do you have anything to say to my answer? I felt like you had something to say to my assessment of CJ's performance.
I mean, I got a lot, actually. I hate the 2007 comparison. Like, everybody wants to do that. Everybody wants to find somewhere to like plant a flag. And I'm like, look, why can't they just be their own thing? Why does there have to be a comparison going, oh no, they look just like
the 2000- cyclical.
Nah, I don't want to hear all that. Like, Eli Manning threw for 3,000 yards, threw for 23 TDs and 20 interceptions. CJ Stroud is not Eli Manning. Okay. I get it. They're both year three quarterbacks or whatever, but I just don't think it's fair. Like, I was actually looking up like where their coaching staff was at that point. I wasn't able to find it yet, but I don't feel like it was the same. You know, like, I feel like they had a very established coaching staff, and they just finally got it to work.
Tom Coughlin was the coach of the Giants in 2007. If I'm not mistaken, he came to the Giants around the same time as Eli Manning, because his history was with the Jaguars just prior to that. I believe he's actually in the Jaguars' office right now.
He was the coach.
Did he join the Giants?
2004.
So
that was his fourth year with the team.
So it was quite literally, if we're looking at it, it's the same timeline in terms of pairing up a quarterback with a head coach and reaching that third year. Because they started 04, 05, 06. I guess it's the fourth year for them, so it's slightly different. And it's never going to be precisely the same. I do think that the biggest reason to make this comparison is the defenses. I think that 07 Giants defense is a prime example of what the Texans defense needs to be. It was so good that it was able to basically propel that team to a Super Bowl. And that team had a very tumultuous season and barely squeezed into the playoffs with an offense that was serviceable. So I think this Texans team will be different from them because I don't think they're going to squeeze into the playoffs as a 7 seed. That was a core part of the comparison for me early on, but with the way this team is playing, I'd have trouble believing they don't squeeze in as a 3rd seed. Like, I think that's where I'm slotting the Texans at. And depending on how the rest of the Broncos and Patriots seasons go, the Texans are in a position to potentially be able to move ahead of one of them. But I'd say I don't have a lot of confidence in that. I do have a lot of confidence that the Texans can be the 3rd seed because for once, and let's talk about this, for once in the past like 2 decades, the AFC South is not the poster child of conference that is literally just getting a team in because conferences are required to have, or divisions that are getting a team in just because divisions are required to send a division champion to the playoffs. Like, the AFC North is in shambles right now. And the Texans, if they can win the AFC South, will be able to take advantage of that and be not the 4th seed for the first time ever. That's the only way they've ever made the playoffs is as the 4th seed. So crazy, crazy to think that they could do that. But I mean, I can see why you don't like the comparison. Because it's not precise. It's not an exact comparison.
I don't feel like the strength of schedule was that good. I think... Like, here's the difference. The Texans have been good, I think, since week 3. Really, really good. It's not like a Giants team that got it together last second, snuck into a wild card, and then got hot. Like, this defense has been really, really good since week 3. Like, and there's an argument to be made that they were really, really good weeks 1, 2, and 3 and just had zero offense. Like,
I was there week 1. I can tell you they were very good week 1.
And that's my point. So when you compare them to the New York Giants, who had a horrible strength of schedule, weren't very good, found a way to get in, and then just got hot, versus a team that I think is going to go into the playoffs as one of the hottest teams in football, it's just not fair. And I get it. You can't necessarily reach out and grab a past team that looked like that. Some people are going to go to like Baltimore or whatever. And
the biggest thing I don't think that's fair either. Not like any other team is the fact that they started 0-3, and the only other team that's made the playoffs after starting 0-3 is a 2018 Texans team that is nowhere near as good as this Texans team.
Exactly. And that's my point. That's why I'm like, look, this team is unlike anything else. And to go and try to reach and grab, I mean, let's be honest, the Giants had to face what was arguably more, in my mind, like the Texans going into the playoffs, this one-way freight train, and nobody wants to play. I don't think anybody was going, you know what, I don't know about the Giants, I don't want to play them. They got really hot and just did really well in the playoffs.
To be fair, the Giants also got really lucky in the playoffs because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was the year that Tony Romo was the holder and missed the hold. Or that could have been against the Seahawks. I don't remember who the Cowboys were playing when they gave it up. They may have given it up to the Giants. I don't remember. My memory's a little foggy on which year all that happened. But we got a few comments in the comment section. Brandon Halam, OG Texans live stream comment section contributor, is in the house giving us some good stuff. Did they ever find out who was driving that bus that hit Rashee Rice on Sunday night?
Jalen Petrie.
I think they did. I mean, they're not going to suspend him or arrest him, which is very similar to Rashee Rice's situation. There's a lot of comparisons to be drawn on Rashee Rice's life and how it has come full circle in that game. Jalen, did you see the NFL memes post where it was like, wow, Rashee Rice finally knows what it's like to be hit at a high rate of speed and have someone flee the scene immediately?
Did you see, I think it was NFL Films that did like a thing where they showed, what's his name? The monster from the Chiefs D-line. Chris Jones sees the hit, he's like, oh my god, you know, like he's on the sideline, you know, like he watching Rashee Rice get blasted, he's like, wow.
I know, because I'm pretty sure it was I can't remember, one of the radio hosts in Houston, Sean, I'm trying to think. I can't remember his last name.
Bijani?
Is it? I may be thinking of the wrong person.
Oh.
He's bald. It's Payne. No, Pendergast. Sean Pendergast, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I think he's the one who quoted and was like, look, here's the biggest defensive lineman on the other team reacting to a perfectly legal hit. I was like, yeah, it's a brutal hit, but I think maybe it might have been a little bit of an overreaction considering it was very legal. There was a former Chiefs player that was like trying to argue that it wasn't a legal hit. I was like, dude, we get it. You want your former team to win, but like, let's stay within reality here.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other comments. The Falcons are trying to give the Rams the number one overall pick. And then Brandon brings up TQ is on the Falcons. You know who else is on the Falcons? Matt Schaub is an analyst for the Falcons. And TJ Yates is currently the offensive coordinator for the Falcons. So,
and if you ever want to get James Roy spun up, ask him about Matt Schaub. Because he can talk about matchup all day.
Let 1 minute. Let me give you a fun fact. So CJ Stroud just passed 10K passing yards. Looking at the numbers, he is very much in a good position. If he has a good season, I think he needs to throw for like 4,500 yards at this point next season. He would take over as the second highest passer. He's currently fourth behind Watson, Carr, and Schaub. If he did take over next season, at the end of next season, if he was to take over as the second ranked passer, he would still need another 10,000 passing yards to pass Matt Schaub as the all-time leading passer for the Texans. So Matt Schaub is my childhood quarterback. That is my
quarterback.
That's my quarterback. That's like, you know, if you can call it childhood. I mean, I guess he took over kind of in my late middle school through high school, which is really the point where like that's kind of your quarterback. And so I'd feel bad for guys that are rooting for the Texans and their quarterback was like Brock Osweiler or something like that, but then, I don't know.
TJ Yates,
right? But TJ, hey, don't disrespect the legend. TJ Yates is a Texans legend. Okay.
Oh,
don't get me spun up on TJ Yates either. But yeah, TQ's on the Falcons. Let's see. It says, I want Chris Jones tested for PEDS game because he hasn't played like that all year, right? I felt like there was a lot of people saying Chris Jones was washed, and I felt like he stepped up and played. It was in short spurts. Like, I think he came out in the second half, and he just was, like, on one. And I was like, man, are the Chiefs going to make a run? I don't know.
Look, I don't know how other fan bases are, but I mean, it's crazy. I feel like we do that all the time. Like a guy plays bad for a couple games, oh, he's washed. You know, like this past offseason, people were trying to trade Danielle Hunter for Micah Parsons on Twitter because, oh, he's younger and you know, Danielle's on the way down. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, did you see what this man did? Like
10 times out of 10, I'd rather have Danielle Hunter. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but none too small being that he is on a lesser contract. He is a more of an effort player. And there's a lot of things about Micah Parsons that don't exactly appeal to me over Danielle Hunter. And that's played out, I think, over the course of this season. So it's not surprising that the Texans stuck with him. Even less surprising that the Cowboys wanted to trade Micah Parsons. Because there's the whole podcast thing too. It's like, dude, it's one thing if you're not a player, but if you're a player, you sound like Draymond Green when you have a podcast. That's crazy. I just couldn't get behind it. We got some more comments over in the Instagram chat. Let's see. Got tickets to the Raiders game? I do. I haven't sold them yet, so who knows? Maybe I'll give them away.
Ooh.
Let's see. What do you think we should do and what we will do to propel our offense in the right direction next season? I'd like to start by saying, and I think I've pretty effectively communicated my stance on the offense. I think it's going in the right direction right now, but I'll go first. I think that the big thing that needs to happen, the running back room is obviously kind of shaky. I think that to throw anything more at the wide receiver room would be a huge misallocation of assets. That's to say, I think you could cut weight in the wide receiver room and get better if you just moved on from Christian Kirk. the tight end room, I think Dalton Schultz has played himself into being in a lot better spot. But I think if there's one thing that they need to
Jalen Petrie, this year's Jalen Petrie.
This year's Dalton Jalen Schultz. Petrie. I have the apology written up. I should go ahead and deliver it now. He's already been really good. Dalton, I James Roy, as much as you probably will never hear this, because you don't probably watch the show, I would like to apologize for being so harsh on you, because it was the scheme. It wasn't you. And you have been excellent. You've been CJ Stroud's lifeline, like you should have been all along. And I blame Bobby Slowick for your misuse and putting you one-on-one with George Karlaftis in the playoffs. But I think if there's one thing that could propel this Texans offense to the next level, as much as the offensive line has improved and as much as I like Titus Howard at left guard for the moment, he's been excellent wherever the heck they put him. He's been great. I think that the Texans should be moving as if Titus Howard's going to be right tackle next season. Trent Brown is a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, which is that this offensive line is lacking talent in places that make it to where Trent Brown's serviceability at right tackle warrants putting Titus Howard at left guard. I think that left guard is a huge need. I think they should be at the highest possible opportunity taking an interior offensive lineman. And then I think that they should either move Jarrett Patterson into center. They should assess bringing in more competition at center. I don't think it's ever been something that's held this team back, because we look back, you've had Michael Dieter, you've had some pretty middling centers that are just pretty okay. So I wouldn't say that that's the most important thing, but I would say that getting a quality guard this offseason so that you can, I think Jarrett Patterson's great depth. I think that, that overall center has played out well this season, but I do think, that they should be going for alignment. And then let's see, I just got it. And it says, are there any linemen in the draft that are around our projected position? I think this is a position where you have to look at Nick Caserio in the face, wind back and smack him really hard and say, hey, this is what a need is. Left guard, go for it. Like, someone sit him down with a blackboard in the room and like write up the definition of a need and tell him, and then put a picture of like the top three guard prospects in this draft and be like, one of these guys fits the scheme. Talk to Kaylee about it and make it happen. Penn State has a guard that's entering the draft. It's one of those Samoan names, so I'm not going to try and butcher it, because I that's inevitably what I'll do. And same thing, I don't know if it's a Samoan name, but out there in Miami, there's another tackle slash guard who I think people are, much like Kelvin Banks last year, people are projecting he'll move interior. And those are the two guys off the top of my head. I have tried to stay away from doing a lot of draft research, because even though I got close to it, I haven't established it as mock draft season. So I do have a mock draft written up with the Penn State guard as our first round pick, but that mock draft's becoming quickly invalid because it was made when the Texans were picking top 10. But I do think that by the end, when all is said and done, his draft projected draft position is actually closer to where the Texans are now. But yeah, Tom, what do you think is something that the team can improve on this offseason to make the offense, you know, get to where it needs to be?
I think both trenches. I think that's where they need to live. I think good teams always start there first. On the other side of the football, I know you talked about the offensive line, and I agree with you. I agree that they should draft. I agree that they should go out into free agency. I agree that, you know, guard, tackle, center, all of the above, you know, two of the three, however you want to do it. You could never have enough of those guys. It's kind of like pitching in baseball. You can just never have enough, because if somebody gets hurt, you're going to want somebody to rotate in there. That's a good problem to have. And for me, I think if you look at D tackle right now with Foley out and with some of the other guys out, I'm struggling with names right now. You could live there too. I know Tommy Togiai has done a phenomenal job, and I think he should get all the run. But you got some guys that are going to be free agents. You got some guys that are older. Denico Autry's, amazing, but he's really old. So I just wonder how much more punishment, you know, that guy's going to take or whatever. There's guys out there in the free agency that they could possibly go get. There's a you know, a center from the Jets, Josh Myers, he's 27. He's a free agent. You know, he costs $2 million. That's somebody they could probably take a swing at. You know, there's guards, but I don't know anything about them. You know, I'm trying to look at guys that are on good lines right now. Don't really see anything that's like screaming at
me. There's a player on the Raiders that was a potential target for the Texans a couple drafts back, like Jackson Powers, I think it was. Like, it's like one of those two last name things going on that a lot of people thought we should trade for. I don't know if the Raiders would make him available, but their misusage of him has kind of made him look a lot worse than he probably is what the general consensus is. So
nah.
I think there's a free agency is definitely an option too. But like I said, someone, if it's going to happen in the draft, it's going to be someone literally sitting Nick Caserio down in a room and, you know, maybe my wife's an elementary school teacher. Maybe if we give her a lesson plan, she can sit down with Nick and communicate it at you know, a very understandable level that a need is literally like, just take a picture of like the number one guard in the draft and just be like, hey, this guy right here. The number one.
Yeah, but I see that's where I disagree with you. I like his philosophy when it comes to the draft. This whole, I don't have a need. I'm going to get the best football players I can and build a team with them. Like when he drafted all these other guys in the secondary and on the defense, were those needs then? Absolutely not. Are we glad that they are on this team? Kalen Bullock wasn't a need when he was drafted. Kalen Bullock is awesome now. I mean.
I think the safety room has always been a need.
I'm talking about the point when he was drafted. There was depth there.
I think at the point when he was drafted, I think you can always look at that room as having been something that was never as stable as it was viewed as. Now, is that going to be the consensus opinion? Is everyone going to agree with that? I don't think so. I think that Nick Caserio was moving that way because he, and I probably didn't take a lot of arm pulling from D'Amico. Like D'Amico probably also was like, this is what we've got. There's never been a lot of depth at that position. MJ Stewart has performed exceptionally, but he has really been the only depth. And so I agree with you. It's been a top heavy position, but every time they've drafted safety, it's always been a valid need in terms of the depth that was needed. And because the top half has eroded, now Nick Caserio looks really smart because he's really packed in the depth with guys who could step up and play. But I mean, even now, even with Kalen Bullock, even with Jalen Petrie, which by the way, as much as I've talked down on Nick Caserio's ability to draft offensive line, the entire secondary has been built by hand by Nick Caserio. You can obviously attribute some to Miko Ryans to that because they work in a collaborative effort. But as the general manager, that is a position he has entirely had his hands in, and it is probably one of the best positions in the entire team. Even with the roughness that safety has had, the defensive backfield has been excellent.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
So, but I agree.
And you dog the line, but I think Ursary's a keeper. I think he did well with Ursary.
I think Ursary's a keeper, but I think that Juice Scruggs was drafted in the second round to play center for this team, and he's currently not been trusted to play. He's been moved around and has not been trusted to play any position for this team. I think that I don't even know if he's a solid depth piece. He's the depth that this team has. I've always viewed Jarrett Patterson as solid depth. Jarrett Patterson was drafted in the sixth round of that same draft. So he has his hits, but the question is, if we go back in that draft, I bet I can look at a few players that were drafted around that point or just thereafter, Juice Scruggs, and I can go,
could do that. Hindsight's always 20/20.
Hindsight is 20/20, but the problem is that there's not a lot of other positions Castillo is drafting where I'm going, man, I wish he wouldn't have drafted that guy who was there around that point. Whereas every time that Nick Castillo drafts an offensive lineman, it's hit or miss on whether or not I believe honestly, I might go back and look at it. Like, I really should go back and look at that draft and see who was available there. And other points, it makes you question picks of his that were very valid. Like taking Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll, very valid picks. I think those were 100% the right picks to make there. But because of how bad the left guard position looked all season, the number one talking point from anyone, I think I brought it up a few times, was that there was players at left guard. He plays for the Lions now. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But there was a Georgia guard that everyone and their mother that was a Texans fan wanted the Texans to draft. And he's looked really good this season. And the Texans did not take him. They went with two wide receivers in that stretch. And he was on the board the whole time. And you go, why weren't we looking at him? He was literally a Tate Ratledge. There we go. He was literally the best guard available for that stretch. It was a known fact the Texans needed that. But Nick Caserio, I guess, had decided in the offseason that signing, you know, Laken Tomlinson, who is now not on the team, and amongst other interior offensive linemen that he picked up was, and I mocked him to the Texans all year too, Amos. But I mean, those are the things that make you question that thought process. But I have been a champion of the best player available method. But I think that I would view it like this. I know you hate when I make comparisons to the Astros because sometimes I'm not spot on. But I think that the best managers that the Astros have had in this run have been ones that are not purely analytics or not purely I'm going to go with my gut. So like a lot of people's frustration with Dusty is that Dusty would be like, screw analytics. In my gut, I know that this is the right decision. And it's worked for him and it's not, right? But I think that some people thought AJ Hinch was too deeply entrenched in this like analytics thing. But at the end of the day, the best manager in baseball, in my opinion, is someone who can look at the analytics and then, you know, when it counts, make the right decision with their gut. And so I feel like Nick Caserio, maybe instead of adamantly claiming that he doesn't know what a need is, could maybe be more honest and upfront and be like, sometimes we draft for need and sometimes it's best player available. It really depends on what's there. Because I think that's really what's happening. I don't think that he's legitimately like, look, the best left guard in the draft is there, but we have higher value on this wide receiver. We're going to forego the guard. Like, I don't think that's what's happening in that room.
That's exactly what happened. He said that as much. That's exactly what happened. And look, if you don't like that he picked Jalen Knoll and Higgins, even though both of those guys have performed exactly like he needed them to perform because they were areas of need as well, and I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, we can sit here and say, oh, well, he should have just went heavy on guard. He should have just did that. This was more important. And true, Tate Ratledge was a guy that a lot of people had and might turn out to be a really good guard. True. No argument. What I will say is that I really like the two guys that he drafted. It's not like he went out there and drafted guys that are bums. I do believe they have roles on this team that are important. I think Jalen Knoll is going to return a punt for a touchdown before the season's over. And I think Higgins is going to have a really good last four games of the season and be counted on down the stretch to make plays. Like, I agree. The offensive line is a work in progress. And I agree he could have probably done more. I also didn't know that what he did was going to turn out the way it did, because he had a brand new offensive line coach and Cole Popovich, who was supposed to be the whisperer. He was supposed to make guys better. This guy had studied under the master. I can't remember that dude's name.
And Skarnecki.
Yes. Skarnecki was the dude, and he turned average into great. And Cole was supposed to turn average into great. And he might do that. It just may take a couple seasons. And it might not be with the guys that are in there currently. They may have to draft a couple dudes. I really think they sat him down and go, hey, tell me what you think we need. And I think he shot and missed. We'll never know.
I like the way that you've brought that up too, because honestly, to me, it's kind of rubbed me the wrong way that suddenly the offensive line is serviceable. The players that are being serviceable for this team have been riding pine all season. And all of a sudden it's like Cole Popovich is an offensive line whisperer. And it's like, I mean, it took him literally 10 weeks to find the right configuration with guys that were in the room. And specifically for me, Jarrett Patterson riding pine all season didn't really sit right with me. I get that he likes Jake Andrews because he coached him back at Troy, but like, with the left guard situation the way it was, I was absolutely shocked that it took so long for them to try him there. And I feel like if they had earlier, we wouldn't have Titus Howard at left guard, because we would have Jarrett Patterson there because he was very serviceable. So, I mean, I always appreciated the way that you talked about that talking point, because even now people are like, oh, Cole Popovich has figured it out. And it's like, what took so long? I don't understand. What the talent was in the room. If we're still experimenting with who's supposed to start, why not throw a guy like Jarrett Patterson in? Why is Trent Brown a known quality tackle, not getting any run? If you think that Titus Howard is legitimately the Texans' best option at left guard, there's a lot of questions around that. So, I mean,
to be fair, Trent was injured to start the season.
He was, but there was several. Once he came back, and you saw the way that the left guard position was playing, it should have been pretty easy to be like, you know, this game, we're going to try this out. But it took an injury to force that, which to me was insane.
Yeah. And I think that with more time and more players, you know, they figure that stuff out, and that becomes, you know, more or less a serviceable room. And we're talking about, you know, who now is going to back up Woody Marks, and they need to go draft a running back, because that could be another interesting, hey, what are we doing in the draft? Because Joe Mixon's out and Chubb is out, and now it's just Woody Marks.
That's a good point. And there is a question in the chat. What are our thoughts on the new Texans running back? As I said, I can only assume they're talking about Woody Marks. What are your thoughts on what Woody Marks has been able to do so far? I'm looking at like the Texans' history at running back, and usually a good running back precedes a great running back, which, I mean, it's really only happened one time. So, but I don't know how you feel about Woody Marks so far. How do you feel?
I think he's got tons of upside. I'm terrified of his ability to stay healthy. I feel like every game, at least for the last month, he's came out of the game and into the tent for a period of time with something. And for me, I get it. He's not a bigger dude, and you know, they ask him to do a lot. But if you want this guy to be the bell cow, which a lot of fans do, I'm one of them. I think when he's on the field, they're better. It's just, can he withstand that kind of punishment? Is he able to, you know, take that workload on long term? And so far, you know, they've needed Nick Chubb to be a 50-50, 60-40 guy, because Woody hasn't been healthy through every game. Like, he's went out for, you know, a quarter, then came back. And I mean, I really hope whoever they, because I think Chubb is still hurt as at the time of this recording, whoever they bring in, I hope he plays well, because I think they're going to need a third running back legitimately in that room down the stretch. And that'll be a topic that we talk about more, because right now it looks really thin.
I think the Nick Chubb and Woody Marks dynamic, combined with the offensive line, which I obviously already spoken to, brings to mind the fact this, right? I think that Nick Chubb, as far as I understand, is only under contract this season. I don't think they've extended him. But he's displayed what this running back room needs to look like. At its best, it's two running backs averaging, you know, 4+ yards per carry that can alternate with each other, be used situationally, pass block, you know, the whole nine. That's basically what the Texans are looking for in a running back, which brings me to the point of, I asked this as a rhetorical question at first, which is like, how high do you draft a running back if you're the Texans? I don't think it's a question of if you draft a running back. I think it's where you draft a running back. Does Nick Caserio want to treat this like offensive line, like pick up some scraps and see what happens? Does he want to, you know, continue to do that with the running back position? Because so far the Texans have not spent any high draft capital on that. It has shown in the past to be effective for some teams, and it's shown to be the bane of other teams' existences. I think that the only running back that I know by name in this draft class is Jeremiah Love, which will be likely a top 10 pick. I mean, he'll be picked pretty high in this draft. Do you think, and this is I think similar to the discussion we had this past offseason about tight end position for the Texans, but though I think it's a little bit more dire, but I think that this draft, the Texans need a draft running back. If it comes down to it, and in the first round, Jeremiah Love is available, do you think that's a wise use of draft capital to go running back in the first round?
I don't know. I don't see any scenario based on what you just said that he'd be available. I'm just looking at Breece Hall out there as a free agent, as a Cyclone, and I just think you just go sign Breece Hall. But I mean,
Nye is literally the only reason I believe that the Texans could bring him in.
And he would fit. And, you know, he's still got some tread, I would think. There's a bunch of running backs out there, though, in the free agent market. J.K. Dobbins will be out there. Najee Harris will be out there. You know, Breece is going to be, I think he's going to be 25. So, I mean, he's still incredibly young. Kenneth Gainwell, who's looked really good in Pittsburgh here or there, he'll be out there. So they don't have to draft. There will be running backs out there.
Have the Texans ever drafted a truly great running back? The best running back in their history is an undrafted free agent, and every other running back that's had a good season for the Texans has pretty much been not undrafted, but has been a major free agent acquisition. The only running back I can think of that has had a good season for the Texans as their main running back for an entire season that they drafted, you know, are the only two I can think of is Dominic Davis. I can't remember what he changed his last name to. I know that he goes by.
I thought it was Williams.
I think it's Williams now or something. And then Steve Slayton are those guys. But, like, I mean, the Texans have pretty consistently taken shots in free agency. You know, Ahmad Green, Lamar Miller. They've had their fair share of attempts at getting a good running back after the fact. The problem for me is that truly great running backs are drafted by their teams, or at least are rookies, which is why, obviously, even though the Texans didn't draft their greatest running back of all time, he was signed as a rookie and had a chance to, you know, and this is, I guess, something that people talk about a lot. I hadn't talked about it a lot recently, but, you know, the fact that running backs in this league are like a commodity that every year feels like dog years in terms of like how long you're going to have that running back before the wheels suddenly fall off. Long gone are the days of like the Adrian Petersons, the LaDainian Tomlinsons, guys who will put in 10 years of like really solid, consistent contributions in this league. So, look, I think the Texans have to draft a running back. I don't think it's going to be too early. I think it'll be similar to Woody Mark's draft position. I think what they really need to go for is like a bigger, you know, more of a bruiser running back, not like big, like I like a taller guy. I think, I don't know. Like more of a Derrick Henry type. Because right now, Woody Marks is like kind of more of a compact back. But he has a lot of fighting him. I think that the Texans, if I'm looking outside of the offensive line for what the Texans need to do to fix this offense, it definitely goes back to the running back position and getting someone who can singularly be the reason why the running game works. So, and I think it emphasizes why the loss of Joe Mixon. So, I mean, sometimes I forget that he is even on the team because of how long he's been out for. But Like, it's hard not to remember how much better this team looked in games that he played, even last season in a scheme like Bobby Slowik's. Like, it made the difference. So, but either way, the last thing I want to talk about today is the division. Obviously, the Texans are now one game back from the Jaguars, and they are sitting in a pretty good spot. They don't control their own destiny. I'll break it down this way. I've been speaking to it all week. The Texans literally need the Jaguars to lose to any team not named the Jets. The reason for that is that even though losing to the Jets would give the Jaguars a worse conference record, the Jaguars would take the common games tiebreaker, which is a higher tiebreaker, because if they win all the rest of their games, they would beat the Broncos, which is a team the Texans lost to. So I had to do a lot of critical thinking to come to that conclusion, and I hope that I'm correct.
They wouldn't have a better divisional record? Or
if the Jaguars and Texans both went out and
wouldn't Jaguars only have one loss?
The Jaguars only have one loss, and the Texans
would have two.
The Texans would have. Oh yeah. Well, either way, the tiebreaker is higher. Conference tiebreaker doesn't matter. So if they lose to the Jets, I mean, I guess either way, the Jaguars take the tiebreaker. They need to lose to either the Broncos or they need to lose to the Titans or Colts. That's like what it's going to take to take back the tiebreaker. Once they lose one of those games, the Texans would take over on tiebreakers. So, yeah. So now you're making me second guess it. See, I did a lot of critical thinking, and now I don't have it in front of me. So now I need to look at it again. But either way, I'll look at that while you're talking. But I get around to my question. How do you feel about the Texans potentially taking the division? Do you think that there's a strong chance? Do you think it's very important at all at this point that they do it? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it is important. I mean, having a home game, having a potential bye, I mean, you know, all of those things would be huge for the Texans. And, you know, that goes without saying. I mean, I do think it's possible. I really feel like this team has the potential to run the table. I really don't see a reason why they can't. And, you know, they just need a little help to claim the division, which, you know, who could have ever thought they would have been in this position, you know, 6 weeks ago? I mean, we were, you know, one loss away from James Roy ready to go mock draft, you know, Mondays. And now we're not talking about mock drafts anytime soon.
All right, so I have it. The Jaguars have one loss and the Texans have one loss in the division. So if the rest of the season played out with the Jaguars just losing to the Jets, then the Texans won out as well, then they would both end. The only way that they don't end with the same divisional record is if the Texans lose to the Colts or if the Jaguars lose to the Colts or Titans. So if all things withstand, the Jaguars can lose to the Jets and win out the rest and still hold everything over the Texans. Because the way that the tiebreakers work is that I believe the conference tiebreaker is like the fourth or fifth tiebreaker. So I think it starts with head-to-head, divisional record, common games, conference, and then strength of victory and strength of schedule. Texans currently hold strength of victory and strength of schedule. So if it gets down to it and it does go to that point, they would take it. So for example, if the Jaguars lose to the Broncos, then that would mean that the strength or the common games tiebreaker would also be the same because the Texans also lost to the Broncos. That's the difference. All of their games against common opponents have ended the same. So then it comes down to the Texans would literally just have to not get blown out of the water by any team that they play. Because their strength of victory, is like, I think 2.02 or not 0.02, 0.1 stronger than the Jaguars. They have a pretty solid lead on strength of victory. So yeah, I think the Texans are very much in a good spot to take the division. And honestly, it couldn't go better because the Jets are not the Texans' best opportunity to take the division anyways. Like the Jaguars should beat the Jets. if the Jets win, all the better, because it means that we don't have to worry about any tiebreakers if the Jaguars lose against the Broncos, because they would literally be a whole game behind us. But yeah, so the tiebreaker thing right now is just kind of in a weird spot. But I think the Texans are in a good spot. We do need to do score predictions. So I almost forgot. I don't want to say it's because I'm discounting the Cardinals as an opponent, but like I was really hyped to give score predictions for the Chiefs game because I was interested to see. But I mean, I am interested to see what you think about the Cardinals game. What are your thoughts? What's your prediction?
I feel like it's going to be a little bit of a letdown game for the defense, and not like bad. I just think the Cardinals are going to come out and put together a drive, and you know, they're going to put some points on the board that probably, you know, they wouldn't have put on the board in the third or fourth quarter, because you know that's when the defense tends to ratchet it up a little bit. I'm going to say 27-13 Texans.
I think
the offense really gets going in this game. I don't think Arizona can really stop anybody. I feel like, you know, this is going to be in our building, you know, coming off that big win in Arrowhead. I think the crowd's going to be really loud and be really excited. Whoo, Brandon, 41-9. Gosh.
Jeez.
I preach. I hope that's exactly how it goes, with two pick sixes while we're at it.
I mean, I feel pretty good. I'm going to go a little more conservative, not by much. I mean, I'd go 24-10 in favor of the Texans. I think that they can win this in a two score fashion, very concisely. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets closer to what Brandon's predicting on Instagram, we have 31-10, which is almost where I almost went with 30. I like to keep the Texans around just over 20 and their opponent somewhere below that. So, I don't want to discount the Cardinals. I think Jacoby Brissett will put up some fight, but I do think that at the end of the day, this Texans team is playing at home against the Cardinals. I think they'll do good. And instead of giving a storybook ending, since obviously the score is very out of hand, I'd like to address this comment from Brandon that says, not just have the Jaguars lose, but also have to win a road game in Charger Stadium. In the same vein as like discounting opponents, I am treating the Chargers very much like I treated the Bills this year, which is that I'm looking at the last time the Texans played them, and I just think there's like too many things working against the Chargers to treat. Like, I have openly spoken to them not being included in the Texans' like difficult games remaining in the schedule. I consistently put that as Bills, which was fringe. I mean, that's more out of respect for the Bills. Like I said, I view it the same as the Chargers game. But Bills, Chiefs, and the Colts twice was always the four most difficult games I viewed as the Texans having left. But even with it being on the road, I mean, the last time the Texans played the Chargers in LA, I was there. That was 2019. That was back when they won that game last second in the LA soccer stadium, Dignity Health Sports Park. But I get it. The Chargers have that Achilles heel, but the main thing that sits with me is the fact that this Texans defense can and should literally shut down the Chargers offense. I mean, I look at the wild card game last year, like the Texans defense, Phillip Rivers is known to literally have, or not Phillip Rivers, geez, I'm thinking about the Rivers signing with the Colts. Justin Herbert is literally known to be the absolute worst quarterback when it comes to handling pressure. So as soon as you apply it, he threw five picks in the wild card, which is an exaggeration. I don't think it'll quite get that bad, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him turn the ball over a bit. He struggled against the Eagles, and that's a team that's got a solid defense. I think the Texans have a better defense. So,
so
what do you got there?
The Chargers are the number 9 ranked defense, team defense wise. Number 2, Seattle. Texans played those guys, you know, put up some points on Seattle. Number 3, Rams, you know, didn't do so well against them, but, you know, did put points up against the Rams first game of the season. Number 7, Kansas City Chiefs. We saw how that went. So I don't fear the Chargers defense any more than those guys. So
I was going to say, like, it can be as good a defense as it wants. It's not one when I think about it, right? Like, last thing I'll say before we kind of bring this thing to a close. The teams that I'm worried about, I've shifted my mindset from mock drafts to like postseason foes and how they stack up against the Texans shows how far we've come. The Seahawks are the number one team in the NFC that I don't want to see in the Super Bowl. I think that the Texans can beat the Rams. I think they can beat pretty much every other team in the NFC except for, and I don't think they can't beat the Seahawks. I just think that's the most difficult foe because it's a team that they just did not show very well against. The score is a lot closer than I think they played them. And I know they've progressed a lot since then, but that's a team that I'm really worried about. And then the Broncos defense gives me fits, but I think that the way our defense played their offense, like if CJ finishes that game, that's a win. The Broncos and Patriots have played the two softest schedules in the entire NFL, which is one of the big reasons they're both sitting at 11-2. Not to take away from, I mean, they're good teams, but I think that's one of those things where I would compare it to like Notre Dame. Notre Dame shouldn't have made the college football playoff because they played a cupcake schedule. They lost to the only two challenges they faced, and the only two wins they had were against teams that were ranked 22 and 20. They didn't have a top 20 win, or they had one top 20 win, and it was literally number 20. So I would say that the Broncos and Patriots kind of look a lot more like Notre Dame. They've just kind of barely been challenged. And I think they've done better than Notre Dame because they've won in the challenges that they faced, but they haven't had a lot of them. Whereas the Texans look a lot more like a Texas team where they've faced a lot of challenges. They've beaten the tough opponents. And I'd say they're better than Texas because they didn't lose to Florida, but it's neither here nor there.
did lose to Florida once.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Thanks for reminding me of that. But I feel really good about this Texans team chances in the playoffs. Like, I think they can really get after it. So
actually, yeah. I want to see Seattle. I hope that we get that rematch. I think that would be must see TV. I would want the Texans to play the best and beat the best. And
the problem is I don't think Seattle makes it past LA. Like, I think LA has the number of every team in their division, especially the 49ers. But if I'm looking, like, the NFC West is the king of the NFC, and I think that the Rams are the king of the NFC West. So who I think. If I'm guessing, if the Texans can make the Super Bowl, it's Texans Rams Super Bowl. That would be my prediction.
You're trying to get a seat to the game.
Oh, what? What are you talking about? The game's going to be in San Francisco either way. So,
yeah.
Shout out to, I think the Texans fans of the year were in the Instagram chat for a bit, but they're going to be at that game, hopefully seeing the Texans play.
That's hot.
I might have to get Stressens on the horn, maybe fly out to Houston, put something together if the Texans play in the Super Bowl.
He's talking about a watch party for the Chargers game.
Right,
everybody.
Watch party for that.
I plan to be there for that.
I'm going to be on family vacation then, and that game's out here. I wish I could go to it, but either way, I the last game I went to in LA, the Texans didn't win, so it's probably better I don't go anyways.
Fair.
But with that, Tom, do you have any final thoughts before we bring this thing to a close?
We're in a good spot. I think the Texans are right where they thought they would be. I know. Not a lot of fans thought that, you know, a month and a half ago, but here we go. They take care of business, do what they got to do. And, you know, we gear up for a long playoff run, which I think preseason was the goal. And they still have that, you know, in front of them and everything that they wanted to do. So, you know, we're along for the ride and I love it.
My final thoughts are not Texans related. This week is Army Navy week. Go Navy, beat Army. I think I told you on the stream last week that I sent the jersey out to Roger Staubach, the Navy jersey, the new 250th anniversary one. And I'm happy to report that he not only signed it, he added a signed picture sent made out to my dad. So my dad's Naval Academy alumni. My whole rest of my family is also Cowboys fans. So he grew up watching Staubach play a lot. I got that signed and sent out to my dad for Army Navy week. So he was pretty happy to see it. I the video of him receiving that, he was super happy, that he got that. I'm happy that it happened, because I didn't think that it was going to, but, blessed, I guess, to be able to see that happen. But yeah, like I said, go Navy, beat Army. Make sure you're tuned in for the number one rivalry in football. It was Texas A&M, but those 14 years of running away from it, or whatever, that decade of running away from the rivalry by A&M kind of ruined that. I still think, I mean, the two most important games in my household growing up were Texas A&M and Army Navy. So super stoked to be able to see that game. Hopefully I get a 100 points from Navy and negative 100 from Army. So
I know those uniforms are clean. Both of them.
Dudes.
Both of them are clean.
Even the Army one, I've warmed up to that one, especially since I looked up that they're like based off of like the text from the Declaration of Independence. Like, that makes it seem a little cooler. But the Navy uniforms are always, always clean. And I actually got myself one as well, so I'll be wearing that on Saturday. Thanks for tuning in. This has been a Texans podcast, a veteran-run Texans podcast, the number one in the entire universe and any extensions past that point. So as far as we know, no official stats on that. We're just guessing. I have been James Roy. You can find me at James Roy NFL, wherever you get your social media. Tom is TC Tom 1 on Instagram, and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And thanks for tuning in. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans. Thanks for tuning into The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
Indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Kachava's All-in-One Whole Body Shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Try their newest flavors, like the limited edition Chocolate Mint. With Kachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Kachava, KACHAVA.com, and use code NEWS for 15% off.